Please silence all electronic devices.
They know they can't possibly win the election without North Carolina, so they're going to go out. They're going to be here all the time between now and November, I presume.
Well, and I'm just, you know, I hesitate to think that, you know, everything is seeped entirely in politics.
They're in a tough spot. They don't have many cards left to play.
Any further discussion or debate?
From Northern Wake County, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Glad to have you along. Final pod of July 2020. We're 7 years, I mean 7 months, into this incredible year. And we're through another week in state politics. That, of course, means it is time for another discussion with Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation. Hey there.
Hi there.
Hi, guys.
We are together via Zoom early Friday afternoon. President Donald Trump visited a Triangle biotech facility on Monday. Vice President Mike Pence came to the region, toured a private school Wednesday. Some states go years without such visits. We had two in less than 48 hours. With his poll numbers for the moment lagging, Trump said a vaccine will be ready very soon, and Pence called on all classrooms to reopen. What was gained for the administration with these visits?
First of all, I think that this really highlights the importance of North Carolina, particularly in the COVID response, in the innovation and the science and developing the vaccines, which, of course, is what the president was here for. But, you know, also North Carolina is at the forefront of developing a lot of medications that treat the symptoms of COVID, as well as developing the antibodies. So I think that, first of all, number one on everybody's mind is the COVID-19, how we're going to come out of this. So I think that the president taking the time to come to visit the facility where they are developing this vaccine, it looks good. We don't know yet, but it certainly looks good. And then as far as the Pence visit, the other thing that I think people really care about is education and what education is going to look like for the next, at least it's looking like the first semester of the school year. So I think the fact that the vice president and the president visited North Carolina on those specific issues tells us a lot about, number one, what people care about, and also that North Carolina is at the forefront of both of these things.
Well, obviously, the Trump-Pence team is desperate. They've seen the latest polling numbers. What is it? They're down 7 points, according to NBC Marist in North Carolina. I mean, other polls have it somewhat closer, but, I mean, the national numbers continue to trend in the wrong direction. They know they can't possibly win the election without North Carolina, so they're going to go out. They're going to be here all the time between now and November, I presume. I mean, obviously, things are looking so bad that Trump even floated the idea of postponing the election this week, which was thankfully shot down. Their problem is that every time they talk about the virus, it reminds people of this horrifically botched national response. And so it's a real conundrum for them. You know, Pence is down here saying we ought to reopen the schools. And then they just announced next week that the North Carolina State Board of Education, which had thought about meeting in person, is going to have a virtual meeting because they realize it's too risky. So what does that tell you about how safe it is to reopen our schools? So they're just in a tough spot. Trump and Pence don't have many cards left to play. They're going to try and do what they can. Fauci said today that the virus vaccine may be 2021. But, you know, they're in a tough spot. They don't have many cards left to play.
Well, and I'm just, you know, I hesitate to think that, you know, everything is seeped entirely in politics. You know, we're in front of a national crisis. I think that we look to the president. I mean, I know Rob doesn't like the president, but, you know, we look to the national leaders to help work through these. And again, the COVID response, how we're going to deal with it, how quickly we can have a vaccine, how quickly we can move towards having normal life again. And a big part of that normal life includes schools and getting kids back in the classroom. So, you know, I think this is, I think that the visit was a nod to North Carolina's leadership in both of these issues. And I think that it's also a recognition this is an important issue across the country. And North Carolina, you know, Rob is right. You know, we're going to see more of the president. We're going to see more of Pence. We're probably going to see more of national Republican figures. But you know what? We're also going to see a lot of attention from the Democrats because we are a battleground state, because we matter. We matter tremendously. And we could very well sway the election in November. So, you know, this isn't unusual that we're getting visits from Republicans. We're also going to be getting a lot of attention from Democrats, and it just speaks to how important North Carolina is in this election coming up.
But 95 days before the election, with the poll numbers lagging. And, you know, at the same time that Pence made this visit on Wednesday, we're also hearing from some private school leaders about there just not being enough federal funding, as we think about the CARES Act and think about other efforts from Congress, to provide them with enough resources to keep schools clean. If you want to set aside politics, okay, let's set aside politics. What wasn't political about these two visits?
No, I clearly think they were political. I mean, the problem that Trump faces is that nobody's looking to him for national leadership anymore. He's long ago botched his chance to be the national leader on the virus response. He owns the failed response at this point. And save for some sort of Hail Mary or, you know, last minute amazing discovery of a vaccine that works, which I don't even think is probably physically possible between now and the election, he just doesn't have much to do. He can say, well, let's reopen schools, but people are voting with their feet. The parents don't want to reopen the schools. We're seeing more and more incidents in sports and other parts of our society where they've tried to reopen, and we're having more and more spread of the pandemic. So it's just, they're just in an almost impossible situation.
I like to think that the recognition and the visit to one of the facilities in North Carolina that is at the forefront of this vaccine development, I think that that is a real nod to the innovation and the growing biomedical industry in North Carolina. You know, this was growing before the pandemic ever came. I think it also speaks to our great research universities, that there's a lot of stuff going on at Chapel Hill, at the Gilling School of Public Health, at the Bowman Gray School of Medicine. You know, a lot of the development that not just the country, but quite frankly, the world is counting on as we move forward with this. Now, I don't think any of the three of us, and I would argue, I don't think anybody listening knows exactly when all of this is going to fall together. But I think that we can all recognize that there are efforts being made. And I'm very proud that North Carolina is at the leadership role of this, the innovation in going towards this.
A powerful state legislator unexpectedly announced his retirement late last Friday. Republican David Lewis of Harnett County has been a leading fixture at the General Assembly during the last decade. He's been behind redistricting and voter ID bills, among other notable legislation. He joins more than 20 Republicans who are not running for another term. Two-parter here. What is Lewis's legacy, and what do all these GOP departures signal to you?
David Lewis's legacy, I think, is one of a public servant. I mean, he has served in the General Assembly for a number of years. I think he served admirably. He has been the rules chairman. Very powerful position in the General Assembly. I think that he has represented his district, but also the farming community very well. And I think that will be his legacy. You know, what do I make of all these people? There were a number of members who ran for other offices, Council of State offices. In many of those cases, there were very large primaries in that. The Lieutenant Governor's office was one of those. So we saw several members who ran for Council of State offices who either lost their primary or, like, you know, for example, in Josh Dobson's situation, he won that primary and so is now running for that statewide office. So we saw that, you know, as part of it. I think it's a mistake to make too much of this. We always see people, there's always a transition. There's always people moving out, incumbents who make the decision. I think the bigger question to ask, I think the bigger question is not why does someone leave? I think the bigger question is why do some people stay as long as they do when you consider what the pay is, what the sacrifice is. And I think in this day and time, as politics and the whole political environment has become so difficult and so divided and so nasty in many cases, and the abuse that a lot of the members on both sides of the aisle, you know, put up with, there's less camaraderie, in my view, of just being in the building and watching the interaction of members and those kind of things. It's a tough job. And so I think the question is not, gee, why did that member leave? I think the better question is, why did they stay so long? And probably the best question is, why would anybody run for that office in the first place?
I think Becky raises a good point there. It's a tough job. The pay is ridiculously low, and often the hours are completely unpredictable. So it's a tough job. I wouldn't be surprised if that is a factor for a lot of people. I think in Lewis's case, his legacy is clearly his comments about gerrymandering. I mean, when he admitted that that is the reason that the Republicans drew the map to intentionally politically gerrymander the maps, they made it 10-3 because they couldn't make it 11-2. that will be, I'm sad to say, I think that will be his most visible public legacy. I think there's also, this is something that happens when people, you know, they sense that there's a political tide changing. I think that's explains a lot of the Republican members sort of looking for a life raft. They don't want to experience life in the minority, which seems like an increasing possibility. I think the only thing about Lewis that I think that it will be interesting to see is, you know, he still has this sort of hanging over his head, this $500,000 loan from a man who's been is on trial for bribery. He's got some, you know, some. He also has some personal serious debt issues regarding his farm. So he's got a lot of stuff, a lot of troubling irons in the fire. I couldn't blame him if he wanted to get out of the legislature and deal with some of these issues.
Finally, the North Carolina State Fair was canceled this week, marking the first time since World War II that the cultural staple will not take place. No fried foods or dizzying rides for us. More importantly, no revenue for the small business owners, vendors, and people who rely on the event. State Agriculture Commissioner Steve Troxler said the possible transmission of the virus was too great a risk to hold the event. Meanwhile, the ACC says fall sports will take place. College athletes live and operate in close quarters. Is this realistic?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we've already had some outbreaks, and the kids aren't even back in school yet. I mean, the reality is, you know, we've got some professional sports like hockey and basketball that are trying to pull this off in a so-called bubble. But that's not going to be the case with a college campus where we've got thousands upon thousands of people. I still am very skeptical that the NCAA, I know the NCAA and the ACC wants to make a lot of money off of football and TV contracts, but I think they got some huge, huge problems. And I think we're going to see more and more cancellations of, we've already seen it in the high school realm. I mean, it just comes, anybody that's gone to the state fair gets it. I mean, when you're in that kind of a crowd, there's no way that that could proceed safely. And that's the situation we're going to see in more and more instances. And this virus is going to remain the dominant story in America and in North Carolina until we get a vaccine.
Well, I think the difference, you know, each of these certain situations, I think that you have to look at individually. And I can absolutely see how the state fair, as we've always done it, and the state fair seems to be becoming more and more and more popular. As North Carolina's population grows, it seems to me, therefore, more people are at the fair. So that very close quarters in the fair seems an unrealistic event to try to hold. I understand with the ACC sports, or some of the sports at least, they were looking at limiting the number of people in the stands. You know, if you can control things in a dorm situation, I don't know how it's any different for an athlete in a dorm than it is in a student in a dorm. Seems to me that's more controllable than some of these other things. And then the other news that I think we got this week is that they're not going to have the Raleigh Christmas Parade, or at least not have spectators for the Raleigh Christmas Parade. And one thing that I'm noticing with these announcements that are coming in, and the Christmas Parade struck me as one, as we seem to be going further and further out as far as the dates are concerned.
Yeah, I agree with that, which is why we desperately need for Congress to take action to renew the emergency benefits. We need a lot more strong, united action from Congress and from the White House to get us through this just unprecedented crisis, and it's sorely lacking at this point.
Of course, the best thing to get us through is to get the economy back on track and to get people in a situation where we can have the confidence to go to work, to get kids back to school, to get all of those things done.
Would be nice.
Becky Gray, Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekends.
Have a great
Stay
weekend.
Cool, guys.
The Politics Pod is there for you whenever, wherever you find yourself needing that North Carolina political fix. The Friday conversations with Becky and Rob hopefully do a small part in getting you caught up to speed on some of what is happening. Then we have our long-form conversations as well. Those drop occasionally midweek. Next week, I'm scheduled to have a conversation with Governor Jim Hunt. If you have any questions that you'd like me to consider posing to the former four-term governor of North Carolina, feel free to find me on Twitter, J_TIBS. Glad to have you along. Feel free to share the program. And make sure, if you haven't yet, to check out Creep as well as Tested. Those are two relatively new productions from WUNC, and they are well worth your time. For Becky and Rob, my name is Jeff. Talk to you again soon. Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Can you say Joe Biden?
Joe Biden.
Say election 2020.
Election 2020.